Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, thanks Hugues for the invitation. So I have a little disclosure. So the first thing I want to say is that I will give you a little bit of a break from dîner break. So I'm not going to really go into DNA damage repair, although of course we are interested in the topic, but I will do talk about tumor evolution. Before starting, I also would like to mention that the study, the disease we study mainly, melanoma, has the highest mutation burden, be it copy number alterations or single nucleotide alterations. So obviously, genetic mechanisms contribute to the etiology of the disease. One of the questions we have is whether or not other mechanisms, non-genetic mechanisms, also contribute to tumor evolution in the context of melanoma. So maybe to set the stage and go back to this idea of why cancer, at least most cancer, and in particular in the metastatic setting, are so difficult to treat. Obviously, one of the answers to these questions is the fact that not all cancer cells are created equal, and thereby not all tumor cells will respond equally to the same therapeutic insult. And that is this other problem is that the cancer cells can change their identity over time. So tumors are obviously dynamic ecosystems. They evolve and they can adapt. And cancer cells can switch back and forth between different identities to overcome therapeutic pressure. In melanoma, we know this for many, many years. We and many others have shown that melanoma cells, which are often seen into what we call the melanocytic state. So these cells express melanocytic markers, so markers of the melanocytic or the lineage of origin, so such as MITF transcription factor or SOX10 transcription factor. But these cells can basically switch into a more mesenchymal-like fate and lose the melanocytic identity. They lose expression of MITF SOX10 and they gain expression of some of the EMT transcription factors such as SOX9 or ZEP1. These cells acquire an increased ability to proliferate, to migrate, to invade tissues, and also to be intrinsically resistant to targeted therapy. So obviously, again, this ability of cells to switch back and forth increase their ability to evade therapeutic insults. And we have shown this many, many years ago now in the context of targeted therapy. So if we expose melanoma cells to combinations such as BRAF-MEK inhibitors, so these are this is a standard of care for melanoma currently in the clinic. If you expose BRAF mutant melanoma to this type of combinations, what you see is that indeed some cells can switch their identity, turn on this more mesenchymal fate, and by therefore evade the insult, create what we call a minimal residual disease, so a pool of cells from which a resistant clone will eventually emerge. So, having these observations at hand, we set out to address a number of key questions in cancer biology, which is, you know, what is the magnitude and origin of cancer cell state diversity? Of course, we are interested in melanoma, so we're going to look at melanoma cell state diversity. And importantly, ask the question whether or not some melanoma cell states or subpopulations are particularly fated to fuel tumor growth, metastasis, and tumor recurrence. I will focus mainly on metastasis and tumor recurrence today. And as I already mentioned in the introduction, one of the key questions is whether or not cell plasticity or the ability of cells to switch back and forth between different cell states can eventually did it. So we will stay away from this. But is cancer cell plasticity a driver of evolution in the context of melanoma, even in the context of melanoma, which has a very high mutation burden? So to address these questions, we collected a number of melanoma lesions from patients, as well as from a number of mouse models that mimic the disease that we have developed in our labs. And we performed single-cell RNA sequencing. So obviously, when you do that, you obtain cells from the immune compartment, the stromal compartment, and the malignant compartment, which we have dissected into different subpopulations. Today, I will only focus on our work looking at the malignant compartment of these different lesions. So the only thing I'm going to say about the mouse models is that, interestingly enough, so especially this mouse model that we have developed and use extensively in our lab, this NRAS-Sync4A mouse model, exhibits extensive intratumor heterogeneity and mimic really well what we see in human patients, so highlighting the clinical relevance of these models and thereby showing that this model can be used as an interesting tool to further dissect the functional consequence of this heterogeneity, as I will show you in a minute. So we've done a lot of single-cell sequencing, basically, not only of melanoma lesions, but in particular of melanoma lesions. I'd like to simply mention that you could look at all these data sets and access the data set via our website, and we have also developed ShinyHub so that anyone can actually look at the data if you're interested. Many of the colleagues in the field have used our data sets, which we are, of course, very happy about. So the first thing we've done is do this cross-species comparison and look at transcriptional programs that melanoma cells can engage, both in mouse and human lesions, and find that at least seven different transcriptional metaprograms can be activated by melanoma cells. And obviously, we find this melanocytic cell state, but also this mesenchymal-like state and a few others that I will briefly mention later during the talk. What I think is remarkable is this transcriptional states can be detected in virtually all lesions we looked at, despite the fact that obviously there is extensive interpatient genetic heterogeneity, right? So these transcriptional programs really override the genetic of these different diseases. What is also remarkable is that this transcriptional heterogeneity we see in human patients is also seen, as I mentioned already, in the mouse, but this occurs even in the absence of genetic heterogeneity. Some of these mouse models, for example, this NRAS-Inc4A mice, so they develop melanoma, which have a very stable genome, very little genetic heterogeneity is seen in this model, yet we see this extensive transcriptomic heterogeneity, suggesting that this heterogeneity is not driven by genetic. Another evidence supporting the fact that this transcriptomic heterogeneity is not driven by the genetic makeup of the cells is if you look at the metastatic lesions in melanoma lesions. So here we performed spatial transcriptomics using the Visium platform, and you can infer copy number profiles based on this data. What we find is that virtually most, if not all, metastatic lesions we looked at are actually monoclonal, so there's very little genetic heterogeneity between the cells at this stage, but we see, of course, extensive transcriptomic heterogeneity again, so suggesting that the transcriptomic heterogeneity we see is not driven by specific genetic subclones. And finally, if you could look at copy number profiles or inferring copy number profiles based on your single-cell RNA sequencing and group melanoma cells into different genetic subgroups. But what we see is that every single genetic subgroup can feed into this different cell state. In other words, all these melanoma cells can engage these different metaprograms. So this suggests, obviously, and this is now seen in many different tumors, that the phenotype of cancers is driven both by the genome but also by plasticity. There is really a one genotype, multiple phenotype ratio in many different tumors, in particular in melanoma. Right? So plasticity plays a role in contributing to this transcriptomic heterogeneity we see in these lesions. Then the question is, of course, what is the origin of this transcriptomic heterogeneity if it's not driven mainly by genetic alterations? And so one of the first hints came from the fact that if you now look at the spatial distributions of these melanoma cell states, what you find is that these cells are not randomly distributed. They tend to co-occur in clusters, suggesting that there is indeed a spatial distribution code that might be driven by the tumor microenvironment. And actually, we I will show you some evidence supporting the fact that the tumor microenvironment plays a major role in establishing this transcriptomic heterogeneity we see in these melanoma lesions. First example is if we look at one of these subpopulations of melanoma cells, which we refer to as the antigen presentation or interferon response population. So these melanoma cells express at their surface MHC class II molecules. So these molecules are normally expressed in professional antigen presenting cells, but we find melanoma cells expressing these molecules. These cells also express an interferon response program. Importantly, we find these cells only in hot tumors and not in cold tumors. And if we perform multiplex immunohistochemistry and look at a neighborhood analysis, what we find is that these cells are always in very close proximity to immune cells, suggesting that this particular transcription program is engaged by melanoma cells via an intercellular communication with immune cells. So immune cells would promote emergence of that particular transcription program. Of course, this is causative, but we this is correlation, but we show causativity, but causation by simply taking melanoma cells from our mouse models, which you can culture in vitro. After a number of passages in vitro, these melanoma cells lose heterogeneity. Almost 100% of these cells are now in a melanocytic state. But if you reimplant these cells in mice and let the tumor grow, then you recapitulate some heterogeneity. Now, importantly, this antigen-presenting subpopulation is emerging, in particular when cells are reimplanted into immunocompetent mice, suggesting that you need an intact immune system to engage the particular program. So this is the first example or illustration of the fact that the microenvironment contributes to shaping melanoma transcriptomic heterogeneity. So, I'll spare you a lot of more experiments and basically end up concluding that we believe we have now a pretty exhaustive view of the transcriptomic heterogeneity of melanoma. We have classified melanoma states in two different subgroups, the extrinsic cell state, for example, this interferon response antigen-presenting population, which is really driven by the interaction between melanoma cells and immune cells. Obviously, an hypoxic cell state is also induced by extrinsic microenvironment factors. And then we have a number of intrinsic cell states. So these cells are basically moving along a differentiation trajectory from the melanocytic cell state to a more dedifferentiated state, including this mesenchymal-like state that I mentioned to you already at the beginning. The cells also go through a neural crestum-like state that I might discuss in a minute as well. So there is plasticity, obviously, and cells can move along the differentiation trajectory and engage these extrinsic factors, the programs. Now, one thing which I really always try to emphasize is that these transcription metaprograms are not mutually exclusive. So melanoma cells can engage multiple of these programs. And some of the cells actually exhibit even intermediate cell states. So one needs to look at this in a more in the framework of a continuum as opposed to cells switching back and forth between different well-defined cell states. The interesting or the important question is, is there functional heterogeneity? Here we look at transcriptomics. The big question is, are some of these melanoma populations fated to fuel growth or metastasis or tumor recurrence? And to, of course, address this question, single-cell analysis is not sufficient. Of course, you could combine single-cell sequencing with barcoding, lineage tracing approaches, or intravitreal microscopy as a way to really monitor and capture dynamics and plasticity of each melanoma state. So we've designed a number of experiments to look at this, and I will just focus on one particular cell state today by lack of time. And focus on this particular mesenchymal-like population that we find very interesting for many, many reasons. So if you look at these melanoma mesenchymal-like cells, and by the way, if you are more familiar with epithelial cancers, this is what, reminiscent to the EMT, of course, phenomenon, right? So if you apply CINIC, which is a pipeline that we helped develop, but was developed by us collaborators and close friend Sten Arts in our institute, you can basically decipher the gene regulatory networks at play in your cell state of interest. So in other words, identify key transcription factors that are driving these transcriptional programs. If you do that for both mouse and human mesenchymal-like cells, what we find is that PRX1 is a transcription factor which is active in these melanoma mesenchymal-like cells. It's a well-known EMT transcription factor. Nothing was known about PRX1 in melanoma. So we decided to knock it down in mesenchymal melanoma cells. And what you do that, you decrease the ability of cells to invade and you shut down expression of the EMT-related gene. So it's a master regulator of this mesenchymal-like state. Interesting, but what is more interesting is that we took advantage of this knowledge to develop a genetic model allowing to fit map these mesenchymal cells in vivo, as well as to monitor the plasticity. And so the system relies on an allele that was generated and kindly provided to us by the Anil Ruski lab. So basically, they connected a Cre-ERT2 RS GFP cassette to a PRX1 promoter. So these transgenic mice were bred into our own mice that develop melanoma spontaneously, this NRAS-Syn 4A, as well as combined with an allele, which is a reporter allele extensively used in the field, which is a LOX-STOP LOX-TT tomato. So these compound mice develop melanoma. If cells in this melanoma become mesenchymal or turn on the mesenchymal fate, the PRX1 promoter will be active, the cells will become GFP positive. And if you give tamoxifen to these mice, you will activate the Cre recombinase and turn on the tomato expression. Now, the beauty of this system is that if cells eventually switch fate or change their identity, I really didn't press this button.
Take it out.
Yeah. Sorry. Should come back. Yeah. Sorry for that. So the beauty of the system is that if mesenchymal cells that become green and yellow if we expose them to tamoxifen change their identity, these cells will lose expression of GFP but will remain tomato positive. So you can really monitor the ability of these cells to switch back and forth between the different states. And the system works really well. So here is a big primary tumor here, and down the bottom what you see here is a cluster of cells that are both positive for GFP and tomato. These are our mesenchymal cells, and we know that because if we fax sort these tomato positive cells and perform single cell sequencing, we find that indeed all of these cells express the EMT genes, the PRX1 regulon, and do not express markers of other melanoma subpopulations. So you're really tracing the right rare subpopulations in these primary tumors. And interestingly, if you look at now how these cells behave over time, so you trace these populations over time in the primary tumor, what you see is that this population actually decreases over time. So that population does not contribute to tumor growth and fuel tumor growth. And that's consistent with other data I don't have time to show you that we have generated, showing that indeed in melanoma there is clear heterogeneity. Only a few percent, about 5% of cells are fueling tumor growth, and these are not these cells. These cells don't fuel tumor growth, but what they do is something even more dangerous, if you wish. If you now look in the periphery, these mice develop metastatic melanoma. They develop lymph nodes, lung, liver metastasis. And when we look in the periphery, every single cell we find in the periphery are tomato positive. So for example, here you look at the lymph nodes, you see here a lot of tomato positive cells. Here we found the subcapillary area, so where cells arrive in the lymph nodes, are positive for both tomato and GFP. And some cells start switching off expression of GFP and remain tomato positive. So we believe that there's a first wave of reprogramming occurring in the lymph node. And it's even more obvious if you look at metastatic sites or lung or liver. So here 90 or 100% of the cells we find in metastatic sites are 100% tomato positive but are no longer GFP positive. If you now fax sort these cells and perform single cell sequencing, we find that these cells indeed have lost the EMT signature and now turn on this more pigmentation melanocytic MITF driven signature, indicating that these cells are indeed switching back and forth and most likely this ability to revert to a more melanocytic state is required for metastatic outgrowth. So in other words, what we believe we have shown here is that this PRX1 rare population, again, it represents only 1% of the primary tumor, is not contributing to tumor growth, but a fuel metastatic dissemination. And so it shows that indeed, in these melanoma lesions, you have extensive transcriptomic heterogeneity, and this is coupled to, you know, phenotypic heterogeneity. So these cells do different things in the tumors. I didn't have time to show you that we identify another population that fuel primary tumor growth. And interestingly enough, this population sits next to blood vessels, and we believe that, you know, there is a perivascular niche which contribute to the reprogramming of melanoma cells and acquiring these more stem-like properties that fuel growth. So, bottom line is that, you know, these single-cell RNA sequencing experiments unravel a more complex melanoma transcriptomic landscape. We show that these melanoma cells are not randomly distributed, but they tend to occur, and we believe that the microenvironment plays an important role in shaping transcriptomic heterogeneity. And then different melanoma populations do different things. One population fuel growth, another population fuel metastasis. So it seems that these two phenomenon, growth and metastatic dissemination, can be uncoupled to some extent transcriptomically and spatially. So having looked at transcriptomic heterogeneity, perform experiments looking at how these cells contribute to growth, metastatic dissemination in a drug-naive setting, another big question is, of course, how does therapy remodel this whole melanoma ecosystem? And today I will just focus only on some of our recent work looking at how immune checkpoint blockade remodel these landscapes. So obviously, no need to remind you that in the context of melanoma, immune checkpoint blockade is a game changer. Many patients do respond, but many patients also do not respond, and we still don't know how to discriminate between responders and non-responders. So this is still one big avenue of intense research at the moment. And obviously, we need to develop combination strategies that overcome intrinsic resistance, those patients that do not respond to immune checkpoint blockade. So what we've done is basically conduct a trial in our institute where we collected samples from patients before treatment and on treatment, early on treatment, so after only one cycle of immune checkpoint blockade, and perform single-cell sequencing and deep characterizations of these ecosystems. So the originality is really to look at very early on-treatment samples, hoping that we will find, you know, discriminators between responders and non-responders early enough so that, you know, we can inform clinical decisions before these patients start suffering from side effects and not responding to the treatment. So I will really jump very quickly into the data and tell you that two populations of melanoma cells that we identified early on are differentially represented in responders versus non-responders. The first population that is, behaves in this way is this antigen-presenting population, this interferon response subpopulation. This is perhaps not so surprisingly. I told you that that population is close to immune cells, is enriched in hot tumors, so this population is overrepresented in responders. So here you will see before treatment responders, on treatment responders. These populations is enriched compared to when we looked in lesions in non-responders before treatment or non-responders. Okay, so in fact, looking at these populations, we can to some extent predict whether or not patients will respond to the treatment. But again, the other population that was differentially represented in responders and non-responders is this mesenchymal subpopulations. This population was enriched in on-treatment in non-responders. And if we now combine and look at these populations and the frequency of these populations is a very good predictor of lack of response. And so putting all of this data together, so we've shown now that these mesenchymal-like cells in melanoma drive metastasis. I just told you that these populations also contribute to resistance to targeted therapy, and now we now show that this population enriched also in patients that are refractory to immune checkpoint blockade. And so the working model or the hypothesis is that melanoma cells that engage this mesenchymal program very good at evading immune system, immune attack. And the question is, how do these mesenchymal cells evade T-cell attack, and how can we revert this to some extent? And so I told you that we perform SNIC analysis on our single cell data. So I told you that we identify PLX1 as one specific transcription factor driving this mesenchymal program in melanoma. And we found another transcription factor, which is called TCF4 or ITF2, which is not TCF7L2, because there's big confusion in the field, in the literature about this. So this is a classical basic looped helix transcription factor. So this transcription factor is very active also in mesenchymal cells, and specifically active in mesenchymal cells and not in the other melanoma subpopulations. Again, like for PX1, if we knock down TCF4, we decrease invasion and we increase sensitivity to targeted therapy, as you might expect for a master regulator of this mesenchymal transcription program. Now, what's really remarkable about this transcription factor as opposed to PLX1, for example, if we knock down TCF4 in mesenchymal cells, we see a shutdown of expression of genes related to EMT, so these mesenchymal-like genes, but we see a drastic upregulation of many genes involved in antigen processing and presentation. This is very specific to this transcription factor and not to other EMT-like transcription factors we find in melanoma. So this led to the idea that TCF4 might suppress antigen processing and presentation and thereby contribute to the ability of cells to evade immune attack. Manipulating TCF4 levels in vitro in different cellular systems as well as in vivo systems indeed show that TCF4 indeed modulate T cell activation and killing. I will not go into too much details here. This is published now, but maybe show you this important experiments where we took a number of melanoma syngenic models. Here we use the B16, but we have now shown that in other models as well. So if you expose these models which are refractory to immune checkpoint blockade, and if you knock down TCF4 in melanoma cells, now you increase their ability to respond, so increase sensitivity to immune checkpoint blockade, confirming the possibility that TCF4 indeed is an important modulator of T cell recognition by T cells of mesenchymal cells. In other words, TCF4, we believe, is an important transcriptional node in melanoma. It actually regulates PLX1, we now know that. So it's upstream PLX1, and by modulating PLX1 expression, it indeed promotes this mesenchymal-like transcription programs and promote invasion. But in the meantime, TCF4 is also able to suppress this particular master regulator of antigen processing and presentation, NRC5. We now have evidence that TCF4 is actually recruited to the NRC5 promoter to suppress its expression. And by doing so, we believe it promotes immune escape. So it's really a very important transcription node that controls multiple transcription programs in melanoma cells. Now the question is, can we target that? It's a transcription factor, so we're of course trying to develop elegant and specific way of targeting TCF4. We have a work on trying to develop degraders for TCF4. But in the meantime, we found a less elegant but quite efficient way of targeting TCF4, which is the use of the BET inhibitor. In fact, there was a paper from the Stotlak lab a few years ago showing that there's a number of enhancers and so-called super enhancers upstream the TCF4 promoter. And those are recruited by or recruit BRD4. If you now use a BET inhibitor, you decrease recruitment of this particular chromatin remodeler, and you decrease expression of TCF4 in. In the dendritic cell neoplasm, the Stot lab showed that this decrease in expression of TCF4 had an anti-tumor effect, and this was rescued by restoring TCF4 expression. So they could show that in that particular case, even though, of course, when you use BET inhibitor, you have massive, genome-wide transcription effects, the effect that they could see in this particular cell line was dependent on TCF4. So we looked at chromatin profiles. So we have a lot of data for melanoma MES and MEL. So we find that indeed these enhancers or super enhancers upstream TCF4 are open in mesenchymal cells and not in melanocytic cells. And if we expose melanoma cells or these mesenchymal melanoma cells to increasing concentration of BET inhibitor, we decrease TCF4 expression. And quite interestingly, we phenocopy what we see at the RNA level when we knock down TCF4. So if you knock down TCF4, I just told you, you shut down EMT, gene expression. We see the same thing when we use this BET inhibitor. We see a drastic downregulation of these genes, and we see an upregulation of genes involved in antigen processing and presentation. And so we have obviously treated melanoma cells with BET inhibitors together with BRAF MEK inhibitors, as well as mice with BET inhibitor and with immune checkpoint blockade. And what we can show is that indeed BET inhibition sensitized to targeted therapy and sensitized to immune checkpoint blockade. Based on this data, there's a clinical trial that has been initiated both in our institute but also at the MD Anderson to combine BET inhibitors with immune checkpoint blockade in the context of melanoma patients. And so this second part of the talk can summarize here. So TCF4 orchestrates multiple melanoma transcription programs and contribute to the suppression of the antigen processing and presentation machinery in mesenchymal cells. And then this transcriptional node can be targeted in a way to increase the immunogenicity of melanoma cells, in particular of these mesenchymal cells, which are enriched in patients that do not respond to immunotherapy. So only two slides to conclude and to discuss the therapeutic implications of this work. The first thing, and I already mentioned and stressed the fact that cancer cells and melanoma cells can harbor multiple phenotypes, and these phenotypes can be driven by both the genotype but also by cancer cell plasticity. And you know, this is very important, we believe, because in some of our models and in some of the patients, what we find is that these metastatic initiating cells or these mesenchymal-like cells do not exhibit unique genetic features, obviously. And so, you know, we might need to revisit the concept of find a mutation, make a drug, and cure cancer. Here, we proposed a new framework in which we proposed a framework in which next-generation therapies need to take into account both the fact that we have driver mutations, but that we should also consider the fact that we have driver cell state and passenger cell state, and that we need to target both via different approaches. So we wrote a few perspectives and reviews on this if you're interested. But how do we approach this? I didn't have really much time to go into this, but what we have found is that these melanoma cells can acquire this metastatic initiating capacity or this tumor-fueling capacity when exposed to the specific environmental or niche factors. So virtually any cells can acquire these properties if positioned in the tumor in the wrong place, if you wish. And so what we need to do is obviously embrace plasticity, but think about innovative approaches that target cell-cell communication networks to dampen either the origin of reprogramming or the mechanism involved in the reprogramming. So, you know, the point I want to make is we have identified these more dangerous cells now, but targeting these cells might not be sufficient if you leave some cells behind and if the microenvironment still is intact, because you might be able to be eventually replenish this pool of cells through reprogramming. Right. So these are considerations that need to take into account when designing combination treatments. And with that, I'll stop here. I just want to highlight the fact that most of the work I presented today was led by one very, very talented postdoc in our lab, Takis, who is now looking for a PI position, and supported by numbers of very good students, and Ioana as a bioinformatician. We have, you know, great collaborators and some funding bodies. So thank you for your attention.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.